Welcome and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants will remain in a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session begins. Today's call is being recorded. Should you have any objections to the recording, you may disconnect at this time. Now, I would like to turn the call over to Mr. George Kosterko. Mr. Kosterko, you may begin when ready.
Thank you very much, Jamisa. I just wanted to thank all the media that's on the call today. We appreciate you calling us on short notice, as it were. I do want to make it very clear that we do have all our materials on the website. That's at www.waterboards.ca.gov. So if you see the announcements section of the website, you'll see a link to all the materials. My name is George Kosterko. I'm the Director of Public Affairs here for the State Water Resources Control Board. We're going to be talking about the proposed water conservation emergency regulations that are out for public comment right now. They're going to be discussed by the board at its next scheduled meeting, which is on Tuesday, July 15th. I wanted to let you know that we've got a couple of people here to answer questions. The first person is Tom Howard, Executive Director for the State Water Resources Control Board. And the second person who will be leading this call from the standpoint of the press or media availability is Felicia Marcus, the chair of the State Water Resources Control Board. I ask that when media ask questions, you ask one question first, and if there's time at the end of the call, we've got almost an hour, we can come back and circle back for follow-up questions. And now I turn it over to Chair Marcus.
Thank you very much, George. Thank you for joining us. I'll start a little bit by setting the stage and then talk a little bit about what the proposed regs are without going into great detail, because you can look that up and this way we can spend the time on your questions. But I think it bears repeating that we are in one of the worst statewide droughts in modern times. We are going to see hundreds of thousands of acres of fields fallowed this year, thousands of people out of work. We have communities struggling for water and bathing out of buckets. We have creeks and rivers that are running dry, and fish and wildlife is also going to be suffering. We also don't know when it's going to rain again. It could be this winter, and we'll all be delighted. We can have a celebration. We can have a party. But it's prudent to act as if it won't. If it doesn't rain, we're going to be glad we rang the bell to save more now. Australia had a 10-year drought. They had plans in place to survive a few-year drought, and they kept hoping for rain, and it didn't come. And if there's any lesson that they learned and they advised from that, as well as our forebears did during the last big one in California, they all wished they had conserved more sooner. So that's what these proposed regulations are about. For context, so you know, these are proposed regulations. We will be having a hearing next Tuesday in which all five board members we'll hear from the public. We've had a couple of workshops where we've had water agencies and the public speak, and these regulations are in response to what we heard. But we will hear again from the public, and I'm certain there will be some people who feel that we're doing too much, and there are many people who will feel that we are not doing enough, and as usually our process, we will listen to them carefully. And on Tuesday, we may adopt the regulations, we may reject the regulations, we may amend the proposal and adopt, or we may ask staff to come back to us at a future meeting with a more refined set of regulations. So Tuesday will be the community conversation about this. These are proposed regulations that focus on outdoor irrigation in particular. 30 to 80% of residential water use is outside the home. That's, in most cases, precious potable drinking water that is used to irrigate landscape of all kinds. What these regulations propose is not that everyone kill all their lawns, but that, at a minimum, people don't overwater, that people don't water sidewalks, that people don't let hoses run when they wash their car. And I want to be clear, these regulations are not proposing to say what all Californians should do. They're proposing the least that Californians should do. Californians can and should do more, and many communities have been doing more for a long time, and they still can do more. We do have communities that have planned ahead and are rightfully proud of the fact that they may have 2 years of supply in storage, and we applaud them for thinking ahead. But 2 years of supply in storage may not be enough, and it's not an excuse to waste a precious resource and let it just go down the sidewalks and down the drain. So, in essence, the proposals ring the bell and suggest raising the floor of a new community norm, which can either be taken as one's self-interest in keeping their community out of harm's way if it doesn't rain in the coming years, just as it hasn't rained in other communities that were hoping for rain, or it can help add flexibility to the system where we have our fellow Californians in extreme crisis all over the state, whether they're families, farmers, or fish. Many urban Californians actually don't realize how bad a drought the state is in part because their water comes from so far away from them and because their local water agencies and the state has done such a good job of being able to bring water to them from far away. But it is a mistake to think that they are not at risk, and it's also a mistake to think that we're really not all in this together. And I'm convinced that if Californians really realized how serious this drought is for their fellow Californians, they would want to do more, and that we owe it to them to give them information on what they can do. And so I'd like to encourage you to send your readers and listeners to saveourwater.com, which is a state site done jointly with the Association of California Water Agencies that have a lot of really good tips and knowledge about just how much water people use indoor and outdoor that they may not be aware of. And we're just thinking about it a little more carefully because there are so many of us, can have a profound impact in increasing the flexibility of our system, preserving your community's water supplies off to the future, showing your fellow Californians that you care, et cetera. So I like to say that having a dirty car and a browning lawn is a badge of honor, should have a badge of honor, because it shows you care about your fellow Californians and your community. So all we are proposing here are some minimal floor standards, both for agencies and for individuals. Do you want me to talk about them a little bit, George, or send people to it?
Yeah, I just want to, for those media and others that have called in and maybe came in a few minutes late, I want to remind everybody that all these documents that Felicia was talking about, the proposed regulations and supporting documents, including a pretty good fact sheet, are available on the State Water Board website on the front page under announcements. That URL is www.waterboards.ca.gov. So I invite you to look that over while you're waiting in the queue to ask questions. So I'm going to ask Felicia once more if she wants to add just a few more comments related to what we're proposing, and then we'll go to questions.
Terrific. We're doing these proposing these emergency regulations under emergency regulation authority that we were given by the governor in his drought executive order of April 25th, where he again encouraged Californians to conserve and encouraged us to look at what was happening around the state and consider emergency regulations. We have done that. As I said, we've held a number of workshops, and we are today proposing these minimal emergency regulations, which for individuals, for example, say that you shouldn't be overwatering your landscape such that it runs out onto hardscape. You shouldn't be using water to hose down sidewalks and driveways. Shouldn't be washing your car outside with a hose that's running that doesn't have a shutoff valve. They're all common sense suggestions, pretty much. And then we're asking water agencies that have drought contingency plans to escalate them to the stage at which outdoor irrigation restrictions come into play. And if they don't have a plan, that they take actions that would come up with an equivalent amount of reductions.
Okay, well, operator, I think we're probably ready for some questions now. I just want to remind folks, and one last time, if they just joined us, We have all the documentation on our website at www.waterboards.ca.gov. So now I will turn this over to the operator to ask reporters if they want to ask questions. Thank you.
Thank you. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 from your touch-tone phone and record your name clearly when prompted. Your name is required to ask a question. Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 and record your name. Please hold while we wait for our first question. Our first question comes from Dennis Cuff from the Bay Area News Group. You may begin.
Yes. Could you talk some about the authority to enforce these rules and collect the fines? And I'm particularly interested in how will it work with large private water companies when they're the water delivery. Do they have the authority to go out and tell their people to comply with these rules?
Interesting question. We could enforce them. Local law enforcement as well as water districts could enforce them. I'm looking, can a private water community, they could have their own rules, right? This is a good question.
And do they have to go to the PUC to get authority to do what you'd like? And if they do, won't they take a really long time?
I'm not sure they do. I'm sort of the... that's public agencies, but there are private water districts. The question is what a private water district could do. They can enforce them as well? All right, I'm told that they can enforce them as well. And again, the fine is up to $500, and so they can, or we can, enforce them the same way that local communities that already have mandatory restrictions do, which is you can start with warnings, then you can do a smaller fine, and you can escalate it up to a larger fine for repeat offenses or really big offenses, I guess. It depends. We would leave that to the discretion of locals. This gives them another tool in the arsenal to save water and get the message out there.
Do you anticipate like police officers or just the water district employees or public work employees, or who will it come down onto to make this work?
All of the above. I think each community, having worked in local government myself, each community is organized differently. So I think we'll leave that up to the communities themselves. For some, they have particularly smaller communities. They have a lot of community policing. They might be able to do it. Others have all kinds of public enforcement authorities, from traffic to water to garbage to whatever. So it really does vary by community.
Okay. Operator, I think we're ready for the next question.
Okay. Our next question comes from Bettina Boxhall from the Los Angeles Times. You may begin.
This is sort of a variation and exploring a little bit more of what the previous question was about. So, for instance, in Los Angeles, there have been restrictions in place in 2009 limiting water to 3 days a week and setting a schedule of fines. So does this override those, or, does Los Angeles have to restrict its watering to 2 days a week, or does this say, you've got something in place, that's fine, it's basically comparable to what we want?
Does it supplement what they're doing? I'd have to double-check it to be sure, but my guess is they are in the stage where they have outdoor irrigation requirements. So in terms of the requirements that we're putting on at the agency level, my guess, don't hold me to, my guess is L.A. is fine. It's been doing this for a while, but the individual prohibitions would supplement their authority, and they could enforce those as well.
Okay, forgive me. I'm still a little confused. L.A. does have mandatory restrictions in place. They have had them in place since 2009. What they say is you cannot water your lawn outdoors more than 3 days a week on specified days or more than a certain period of time.
Right.
So... your regulation says 2 days a week. So does L.A. have to change to...
No, that's actually not how it works. If you don't already have a drought plan in place where you're regulating outdoor irrigation, then our fallback option is 2 days a week. L.A. already has mandatory, and so we wouldn't be supplanting it at the agency level. And the individual prohibitions that are a part of this would just supplement and they could enforce those, as could we. So we wouldn't be substituting our judgment for Los Angeles, because what we're saying essentially to agencies is if you have a plan, you need it to be escalated to the level where you are, hey, you have mandatory outdoor irrigation requirements. LA already has them, so it doesn't have to worry about enforcement against it, but it could call upon our individual prohibitions and enforce those as well to supplement what they've done.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. Thanks for asking the question.
Our next question comes from Jessica Calafetti from San Jose Mercury News. You may begin.
Hi, thank you for speaking with us. I have another follow-up question to the first question. And
you all are so excited about enforcement. That's so interesting.
I understand you guys said that the private water companies may enforce the rules, but will they be required to enforce these new rules, or could they say, you know, we're a private company, we don't want our users to have to reduce their watering of lawns?
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about, I don't think we're directing that they have to do the enforcement. We're saying that any local can enforce, we could enforce. We're saying they can. Right now we're not saying they shall.
Okay.
They should.
Right.
There are a lot of things people should do, but again, the regulations, as I said, are the bare minimum.
Yeah, this is George, the Public Affairs Director. Part of the purpose of the workshop or the hearing on Tuesday is to get input from the various water districts. So we expect that this question you've raised is probably going to be discussed openly among the representatives of the water districts, as well as by other regulatory agencies that might be there, associations like California Association of Water Agencies or Association of California Water Agencies, as well as the five board members.
Sure. And one other follow-up question, if a private water company did want to enforce the regulations, would they need to go through the PUC to get approval?
So this is Max Gomberg, Max, M-A-X, last name Gomberg, G-O-M-B-E-R-G. I'm a senior environmental scientist with the board and formerly an employer, employee of the PUC. So the way this works is the investor-owned utilities will basically take this order, should the board adopt it, and go to the PUC, which will use a quick ministerial process to have them formally adopt it, and then the PUC, as part of that, can direct them to enforce. They don't need the PUC to direct them to enforce because they have the state order, but that the PUC could sort of add emphasis to this.
Okay. And do you know how long that would take? I know you said quick, but how quick is quick?
So the PUC uses a process called an advice letter process, which is explained on their website, and this would go through that process. So long as there were no protests, it should take about 20 days.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Operator, we're ready for the next question.
This is helpful. See what the question is.
Our next question is from David Pinnick with KCRA. Your line is now open.
So you had difficulty getting some agencies to even report their amounts of water use earlier this year. Do not report, does that trigger the $10,000 a day fine?
Yeah, I think it's in that section, isn't it, or no? If we issue a cease and desist order. Yeah, we could. I mean, there's a distinction. For a voluntary survey, it's actually not a bad showing, although we were disappointed in the showing. But that's why we've put reporting into the regulations so that it won't be a voluntary thing, and we will take appropriate enforcement action. I guess that would be a cease and desist order punishable by fines if we don't get the information. We've also, as you may have noticed, we've asked for it on a monthly basis, and we've asked people to try and estimate the per gallon, per capita gallons per day, which is sort of a better measure of how well a community is doing, although some communities are going to vary because they have different climates, et cetera. But it will give us a better sense of how communities are doing so that we have a basis for action as opposed to the percentages we were asking for before.
And so you're asking agencies to go to, if they don't have restrictions on days watering, to go to 2 days a week or reduce by comparable amounts.
Right.
How will you determine what are comparable amounts compared to 1 year ago?
Yeah, we've left it up open. We'll have to figure that out as we go along. We'll be looking at the information that we get. We'll be working with the Association of California Water Agencies and water professionals around the state. I mean, it's the kind of question we should be asking people next week to help give us insight into now that we've got these proposed regulations out. The bottom line is what we're saying is that everybody should do something. Every community should be doing something about outdoor irrigation as opposed to just ignoring it, considering that it's kind of the low-hanging fruit. Again, we're talking about not overwatering folks' lawns and not watering sidewalks. As I said, this is a bare minimum. This is not the advice on what folks should do. Folks should be doing more, and many communities are doing more and can do still more. And so we're just trying to lay out what's the bare minimum everyone should do to be aware of the precarious situation that they and their fellow Californians are in.
And if these are adopted next week, would this be the first time in state history that we have statewide water rules?
Well, we've done some water conservation rules in the past. I believe it's the first time that we'd be doing them on this scale across the state under emergency regulation authority. But we're digging into the boxes from 77 to see if we can refine that answer a little bit.
Okay, operator, we're ready for the next question.
The next question comes from Rob McMillan. Your line is now open.
I have a question about enforcement, kind of follow-up to the first couple of questions. We're in Riverside, for example. In a city like Rivers in the Inland Empire, people get their water from Riverside Public Utilities. Mm-hmm. So in, for example, this city, would the enforcement be up to anyone in law enforcement, for example, Riverside Police, either the Sheriff's Department or Highway Patrol, someone like that, as well as anyone with that authority with Riverside Public Utilities, or does it extend beyond that?
I think it extends beyond to anybody at the local level that has law enforcement authority. It's sort of a general ability. It's most likely, of course, that the public utilities, public works, other local agencies would be the most likely people to be focused on this. Depending on, the nature of the community and the other things that law enforcement generally has to take care of. This is going to vary by community. But I think our expectation, and perhaps we'll hear about this on Tuesday, is that it's largely going to be enforced by the local utilities, but not exclusively. Again, it's going to be up to the local community.
And again, what you're asking them is, they can enforce these new rules. They don't necessarily have to. What can residents do if they see massive water waste around them? Are they sort of being asked also, hey, keep an eye on your neighbors, and if so, call your local utility company, and they can send someone out to enforce the law?
Well, many communities are already doing that, Sacramento being an example that many people have pointed to in the recent past, but many communities do have hotlines and ability to report, and it's similar to the smoking vehicle programs as well, and they start with a warning and a reminder. Again, we're not trying to spank people. We're trying to ring a bell and get people's attention to the importance of not wasting a precious resource when we do not know how long this drought is going to last, and we figure it's better to be prepared and ring that bell now, and if it ends up raining, terrific, and if it doesn't, we'll be happy that we did.
Okay, and then just one real quick quick last question. If this is approved next Tuesday, did I hear correctly in that it goes into effect 20 days later?
No, it would go into a shorter period before it becomes effective. It's the CPUC process for some of the privates may take up to 20 days, but our regulations, if adopted on the 15th, it has to be approved by the Office of Administrative Law, and they then likely go into effect on August 1st.
Got it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our next question is from Mark Mukinfuse with Press Enterprise Newspaper. Your line is now open.
Yes, you mentioned the 1977 when we had mandatory regulations. What have we learned from past situations like this that are being incorporated into these current proposed rules? Is there anything new or different?
Well, I think we've incorporated what we learned back then. I mean, the example I like to use then is the board did use its waste and unreasonable use authorities to say, for example, that ornamental lake and fountain in Mission Viejo, for example, that didn't have a recirculating pump was waste and unreasonable use. And we've incorporated that ornamental fountains without recirculation in this. So we've tried to build in the things we learned then. We're also trying to build in the best of the features that are common to those local agencies that already have mandatory or even strong voluntary programs going. We're taking the sort of basic minimum standards and putting them in there, and we're also building on both the Australian experience and the experience in the 70s, where all of those who reviewed that drought said, we wish we had started pushing conservation earlier, because then you end up with fewer communities that end up in extremis as it wears on. Many of us are traveling around the state, and we're dealing with communities that are down to having their water delivered by a tanker truck and who are bathing out of buckets, who are keeping their water to basic sanitation. We're worried about firefighting water in many parts of the state, and it really is in the state's interest to see that those cities and communities that can extend their water resources through another year take measures to do so, because we can't be sending water trucks all over the state next year. And so prudent planning now saves us from an emergency or a catastrophe later on. That's why, again, these are modest proposed regs. If the drought goes on, we may well amp them up. And so in many ways, they are just setting a new floor of the basic minimums that people can do. And we think that once people start looking at these issues, they can and will do more. Communities will do more. Individuals will do more. But as we look at communities that are not doing much of anything or are doing only minimal things, we have been encouraged to act at some level to show the severity of the potential crisis we may be in if it doesn't rain this fall.
Okay. And I apologize. I was called in as a fill-in on the last minute of this, and I haven't had a chance to look at these regulations, but we're talking a lot about residential. In terms of agriculture, is there anything there? And if so, how would that be enforced?
Well, agriculture's water use has already been cut back in many cases severely. I mean, that's hundreds of thousands of acres are being fallowed as we speak. Three areas where folks tend to get their water, and every community is different, including every agricultural community. Some get chunks of their water from the state or federal water projects or other projects. Those allocations were made earlier this year. In some cases, the allocation was 5% of normal, or 5%. In some cases, with more senior users, it was modestly higher, so agriculture took very large hits in that arena earlier this year. Similarly, surface water supplies have dwindled because there's just not as much water in surface streams, and our snowmelt is lacking, and so it's not being replenished, and junior water rights holders in many parts of the state have had their water rights, what's known as curtailed, in favor of more senior water rights holders as part of the state law. And so we are focusing primarily here on residential customers as we see fields that would otherwise be growing food and fiber as compared to lawns that are being overwatered.
Operator, I think we're ready for our next question. And also, I ask the reporters, please let us know your affiliation before you ask the question. Thank you very much.
Our next question is from Don Thompson with the Associated Press.
Two-sided question for you. Even if consumers comply as you hope, will that be enough to get the state through this water difficulty as far as how much you expecting in savings? And if this does not bring enough savings, what happens next? You mentioned about amping up the regulations. Would that include, like, mandatory restrictions on all water use, or what else would the board consider at that stage?
Well, one step at a time. I would say the answers to your questions are no and yes. And that, is this enough? No. This is enough for a start to establish, I think, again, it's a proposal to start the conversation and to bring us up to the least that people should do. I think it's prudent to take the long view and assume that it's not going to rain next year and that it's not going to rain the year after that. If you look at what happened on Australia and what might happen here and you go back to before we record it every year, there's tree ring evidence of 100 and 400 year droughts in California history. And so you can't count on being bailed out. And so Californians should do far more, particularly in outdoor irrigation, and still do more indoors. And we're encouraging people to do more. But this is our starting effort to get this on deck and to raise the floor. If it doesn't rain later this fall, we certainly will consider more stringent measures. But we'll wait and see also what communities do, because I'm kind of, bad metaphor, a glass half full kind of person, and I think people will rise to the occasion. We just need to ring the bell and to direct them to resources and to encourage local water agencies to amp up their game, which they are clearly capable of doing.
And just to follow up, if I can get at least some sense of what some of those more stringent measures might include, can you outline what the board might consider? Or I realize it's speculative at this point, but what could happen if this doesn't do the trick, or if the rains don't come?
We might try to do more about leaks. I mean, if you look at our materials, you'll see we have a lot of things we are encouraging people to do. We're not mandating that they do yet. You know, leaks can be 10% of more or more of water use. That's in part why we're even using California in the budget. Even we're using some cap and trade dollars to deal with leaks. It wastes energy that's embedded in water. It also wastes water. We might talk about that more. We might go to more stringent landscape scale. We might encourage drought rates and other things. There are a few places we have not yet tread here.
Thank you.
The next question is from Gus Thompson with the Auburn Journal. Your line is now open.
Hi, it's Gus Thompson with the Auburn Journal. And you mentioned ringing the bell. What communities out there are causing the most problems, or agencies for that matter? What are the ones that aren't really doing anything that you mentioned, or doing too little in your mind?
I don't have a bad list in front of me. We're just trying to encourage everybody to do more. I don't have a list of agencies to spank here. It's just that we know that there are a number of agencies that are going above and beyond and doing a lot, and we actually want more agencies to do more. We're sending a message that California is in a state of crisis. We are focusing here on outdoor residential irrigation, because we see that as an arena where, again, 30 to 80% of scarce potable water is being applied, and it could be applied more judiciously. you know, many communities are even doing lawn buyouts to help people with the cost of converting from a water-thirsty lawn to beautiful ornamental landscaping. People have done it in Las Vegas quite rapidly and successfully. We're a Mediterranean climate in much of California, and we could do better, but they're trying to help their residents make that transition. If people can afford it, they ought to be doing it. If they can afford to retrofit all their appliances, which are getting more and more efficient, they should do that. Many communities also go out and will go and do indoor toilet shower, other appliance retrofits. Those communities are to be applauded because they understand the value of saving water. But then there's, you know, a whole host of things people can do, from not running a dishwasher until it's full to, you know, people all over California are showering with buckets and then using the water to water their plants. I mean, there's a lot of ingenuity that you can apply, but as we look at where an awful lot of precious potable water is going, it's going to water outdoor plants beyond what they even need. And so that seemed like a good place to start if we were talking about statewide regulations. Again, regulations are a minimum threshold. They are not the route to the promised land.
Would you be developing a list as things move on as perhaps the next step to, as you mentioned, you know?
I'm not as into shaming as many others, but I know that I'm sure there are people who know what that list would be. When we get the reports in, we'll have more of a sense of how people are doing. I mean, the per capita water use varies widely across California. So if you look to, for example, if you looked at the city of San Francisco, which doesn't have much in the way of outdoor lawns, their per capita water use is lower than many other communities that have large lawns. That doesn't mean all lawns are terrible, but there are many lawns that are just purely ornamental and not serving a function, and we really want to say, at the very, very least, for heaven's sake, do not overwater your lawn.
Okay, operator, I think we're ready for another question.
The next question comes from Tony Gwinier with NBC4 LA. Your line is now open.
Yes, Tony from NBC4. The enforcement questions have been answered, and that's what I had a question on, so pass on me. Thank you.
The next question is from Mary Callahan with Press Democrat newspaper. Your line is now open.
Thank you. Let me try to formulate a piece of question here. First of all, I'm a little bit confused, and forgive me if I'm slow, about the degree to which those districts that already have mandatory plans need to make those mandatory plans match the minimum levels that are being proposed here.
No. I mean, there are two different sets of things. That's a very fair question. We've done a couple of things. We've done individual prohibitions, and then we have done things for agencies. And for agencies, the core requirement is that if they have a drought contingency plan, they need to amp it up to the stage at which they have mandatory outdoor irrigation rules, whatever those are. If they have them, great.
Even if they don't meet the exact, not precisely.
And the other things are fallbacks for if they don't have a plan or they have an inadequate plan. But even there, we say you could come up with an equivalent. The point here is that all agencies should have something going on about limiting outdoor irrigation. That's the bottom line, really.
Okay. And then my other question has to do with the fact that some of these are we're talking here about mandatory conservation measures, but sort of leaving the discretion to the districts as to whether to enforce them or how to enforce them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not clear to me how that helps the situation where we're saying that some communities are doing a lot and other communities are not, if they are still quite a bit of flexibility in terms of how to impose those regulations. Or regulations in general.
Well, I think to a certain extent we're trying to take a light touch in respect to the expertise and knowledge of local water agencies at this initial shot. We and our regional boards are also capable of enforcing some of these. Other agencies are capable of it. And I think we're, at least at the proposal stage, and I suspect we'll hear about this at our hearing next week, we're trying to take the lightest touch we can to get the point across and give local agencies more tools in addition to giving direction to the public about what we as members of the community that is California really ought to be doing to help our fellows. As I may have said earlier, but I've been saying a lot this week, I do think that having a dirty car, a semi-dirty car, and a browning lawn deserves a badge of honor because it shows that you're aware of and care about your community. So a lot of this is about sending a message.
Okay.
Our next call is from Lorraine Herman with KNX News Radio in Los Angeles. Your line is now open.
Hi, thank you. It's Lorraine Herman, KNX in Los Angeles. And getting back onto this in a little bit on enforcement, what I hear is a lot of voluntary and neighbors reporting on neighbors, self-reporting by agencies. Can you maybe talk a little bit more about that? I just don't understand how it's going to be really enforced and how you get the message across to people that there really is a problem. I mean, I turn on the tap and there's plenty of water. And how do you get that message across?
Well, we're hoping you all will help us with that, which is why I keep talking about how bad the drought is. I feel like Debbie Downer everywhere, but it really is bad. And, I know I and my colleagues have the opportunity of seeing how bad it is across California, which is difficult for folks who are far from their water sources to understand. And so in many respects, we're relying on you all to help spread the word. We have encouraged agencies to get the messaging out. Some agencies are doing an excellent job, but it does require repeat messaging. I do remember the drought of the 70s, and I still have miniature billboards from that time that I got. And I think that it really does require all of us as a community to keep reminding people of how serious this is and that we're all in this together. In some ways, proposing the regulations helps get the word out. Our hearing next week will help get the word out, and then giving local agencies a few more tools in the arsenal to use will hopefully help them. We have had some water agencies who said us doing something will help them as well, either with their own resolve or by giving them some company that we're all in this together.
Okay, so thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question is from Hunter Swartz with The Washington Post. Your line is now open.
Thank you. I was wondering how much authority the board is granted to escalate this if things weren't to get any worse, if things were to get worse.
Well, there's not a limit on our authority. We could, in fact, do more. We're hoping that folks will do more. There's a water code provision that the legislature gave us for the duration of the drought that gives us the authority to adopt emergency regulations. The governor gave us the authority in his executive order to do it for this or any other related issue. We've used our emergency authority to do rapidly do a general permit to advance recycled water use for outdoor irrigation and agriculture that we did last month. We've also given low-cost financing to agencies to try and accelerate that supplemental source. And so I think it's as limited as our creativity and our prudence. Again, statewide regulations are not undertaken lightly. That's why what we're proposing here as an opening salvo is the bare minimum that we feel everyone should do. But we are continuing to encourage local agencies to do far more, and they're closer to the public and closer to the work. I mean, again, as I said earlier, having worked in local government years ago in Los Angeles, we're in some ways we are the victims of our own success because we've done such a good job delivering water out the tap that people don't recognize how far away it comes from or how much it took to purify it to the state that it can come out the tap and you can drink it without fear. And so part of the challenge during the drought is to say that we should all be thinking much more carefully about how we use that precious resource. And even if you're just thinking of your own community's self-interest, you should try and conserve to preserve those reserves as long as possible in the event that we don't get rain and snow the next year or the year after, which could definitely happen. And if it does rain and everybody thinks we're being grumpy now, fine, I'll take it. Call me whatever name. If it doesn't rain, we'll be happy that we did this, and perhaps we'll do more.
The next question is from Deborah Kahn with Greenwire. Your line is now open.
Hi, Deborah.
Hi. Thanks. I was hoping, this question is kind of amorphous, but I was hoping you could talk a little bit more about the motivation, because you're talking about the potential for continuing drought next year and that this will help us prepare for it. But the governor requested a 20% voluntary cut, and then your survey showed that people only reduced 5%, right? So what has that done? And if people don't reduce more, are we going to be in more dire straits right now or just next year?
Well, that really depends on the community. Every community has a different amount. There are some communities that have a lot of supply for a couple of years or more. There are other communities that don't have quite that much. I mean, we have communities that are on a 120-day watch who are at risk of running out of water. So it's as varied as the communities of California. The governor called for a 20% reduction. You know, some people have answered the call. Others, not so much. I think in some cases people were understandably proud of the millions or billions of dollars their ratepayers had spent to build storage facilities or to implement recycling or do all sorts of good things, and they're to be applauded for that, but it sent a mixed message about how safe we all are. I think what we're saying is that you can hope for rain, but that's not a strategy when we know from our experience historically, but also from the Australians' experience, that this drought could last much longer, and it's prudent to take measures now. And so this proposal is sort of the minimum amount for an opening shot at the statewide level. Studies do show that mandatory restrictions are more effective than voluntary restrictions, and so that's why we're treading this way.
Okay. And thanks. And then also I had a follow-up question, because you mentioned that people were kind of resting on their laurels having spent all that money on extra storage, but are there any other reasons that people might not have reduced water usage when the governor asked? Is it because governments don't really want to be the bad guy and order reductions, or why wouldn't people have done that?
Well, yeah, it could be. I mean, sometimes in each community there could be a difference in political will, or there could be other things that they are trying to do. In some cases, really, there are communities that have been conserving for 20 years. There are other communities that haven't been, and so it's easier for the ones who haven't been to get bigger percentages faster. Some folks told us that part of the challenge in the beginning of this year was that it was a very dry year and that the preceding years were wetter. If the year is wetter, people don't feel the need to water their lawns as much. And so there was an understandable uptick in water use as people were still focusing on watering their lawns. Again, it's part of why we're focusing on outdoor irrigation, because it is such a huge percentage of water use in residential California, and it is the place where people can cut back with the least amount of harm. As I've said many times, again, this is anecdotal, but experts in the field say it, you know, people frequently think more is better, and they will keep watering their lawns, and instead they're actually watering the 3 feet below their lawn, which doesn't help anybody. And so at a minimum, we're trying to make the point that you should not be overwatering your lawn when other people's fields are going fallow and communities are running out of water.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay. Operator, we're ready for another question.
Our next question is from Alex Breitler with the Stockton Record. Your line is now open.
Hi, folks. Hey, just real quick, you were talking about how cities basically will need to escalate their drought plans to include some kind of mandatory outdoor irrigation restriction.
Mm-hmm.
Just as an example, here in Stockton, we do have a water conservation ordinance that restricts watering based on time of day.
Mm-hmm.
However, that's a routine measure that's in place every summer. I mean, there's nothing extraordinary about it. So if I'm hearing you correctly, you're saying that would be sufficient to comply with the regulation, even though it's routine?
It might be. It depends on what's in their drought contingency plans. A large California agencies, the vast majority of them have drought contingency plans with different stages. They're called urban water management plans. And so in deference to local wisdom about what makes sense in their communities, that's why we've suggested that they just at least go to the stage at which they're dealing with outdoor irrigation. In warm places like Stockton, time of day watering can actually save quite a bit of water in terms of evapotranspiration, and so it may be enough. I don't know. We'd have to look at it. I'm sure we'll have some discussion about it, but it may technically meet the letter of what we're saying.
Okay.
I don't know.
And then I'm sorry. Really quick, if I could follow up. I think I saw in here the projection is for about 500,000 acre feet in total savings from this regulation. Is it fair to say, though, that achieving that number would depend on local agencies being willing to enforce this, or do you think the education component alone would? I guess I'm curious where that number comes from.
I think it's both. I mean, I think to a certain extent, you know, I'm sorry, this is me going back to law school days, but, you know, regulations are the sort of a minimal social construct of what we, you know, believe we all should do together. I do remain a firm believer that people want to help their communities, and they think even more broadly than their communities. So we're hoping that a combination of enforcement but also the messaging will help yield more water. And again, we and the SaveOurWater.com site and water agencies across the state are definitely encouraging people to do far more. And places all around the state where people are stepping up to help their fellow citizens, whether it's loading them water or running pipe or I believe in the better angels of our natures and people stepping up, and then as a last resort, worry about your own self-interest in running out of water in the next if it doesn't rain next year. You know, there's interesting. I mean, I can't tell you how to do your business. You're the professionals, but there were an awful lot of stories about El Nino that got people thinking that all of a sudden El Nino was coming and that we would all be saved by El Nino. And there haven't been anywhere near as many stories about the subsequent information that said, A, even if it's an El Nino, it's just as likely to be dry as wet, and two, that it's more likely to be a moderate El Nino. So you do have people out there who really think it's going to rain this fall, so why are we worrying about that? And hoping for rain this fall is not a strategy. I like to say it's like buying a lottery ticket and confusing it with a retirement plan. So it's just important to get the message out that it could be much worse and that there are relatively easy things that people could do to make it better.
But enforcement would be a part of that 500,000 acre feet projection. I mean, that does play.
Yes, and we anticipate that many agencies will, in fact, add this into their enforcement repertoire.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question is from Tim Herden with the Capital Press. Your line is now open.
Hey, Tim.
Hi, thank you for taking the time. And I'm just kind of looking at the contrast. Recently, you had, curtailment notices to, I think it was 8,000 water rights holders throughout the valleys, and you got, I think it was 31% compliance or apparent compliance. And so last week, you passed an emergency regulation that was more stringent, basically saying do it now or else. With this, I'm hearing a lot more of shoulds than shalls, and you say you don't want to spank people or you want to take a light touch. Are you concerned that, and there's some confusion as to how it's going to be enforced and where, are you concerned that in a month or two you may be forced to come back with similar, more stringent regulations because not very many people or communities are taking part, and if that's the case, why not pass the more stringent regulations now?
Well, it's an interesting question, Tim. I think they're two different things. You know, as you know, and some of the others probably don't, we are charged under the Water Code. Core of what we do is manage the water rights system, which is a long-established, pretty tough system of seniority. And it's part of our mission to curtail juniors in favor of seniors and to take enforcement action. We did those regulations last time to try and amp up our ability to enforce. We take that mission very seriously. It is something that we're charged with, and we do in these times, and everybody looks at us to do. It's part of what's motivating us, given that we know the cutbacks in agriculture are so significant, to take a look at urban outdoor water use. But because we haven't done it this way before, and because there are local agencies that actually do an excellent job of this around the state, we felt that it was better as a proposal in our opening foray to take this this approach. It, as I said, this is the minimum standard, and we think everybody should do much more, and we're encouraging people to do more. But we felt at a minimum this was an important start, and we will come back to revisit it if we don't see results. But we're optimistic that we will, so that urban California is sharing in preparation for the drought.
Yeah, my follow-up question is the governor, I think it was January when the governor issued his emergency proclamation. We're now in July. Why did it take as long as it has to issue these guidelines or regs for urban folks when ag has been dealing with this all spring?
Well, I think it's all been coming in waves. We also have been watching closely, as many urban areas have in fact been stepping up and doing a lot. And in April, when the governor asked us to do a survey of how things were going and gave us the authority to do these kinds of emergency regulations, we got on it, did our survey, looked at it, held a couple of public meetings to get a sense of what the experts thought, and then we made this proposal based on what we heard. So it's actually relatively recent. The governor's call in January was for voluntary compliance. What we've been working on since the end of April was the notion of mandatory compliance, which are two different things.
Okay. Thanks.
Our next question is from Mike Dunbar with the Modesto Bee. Your line is now open.
Thank you. These are necessary and common sense rules or measures, but here in the Valley, almost all of our cities get all or most of their water from groundwater, which the state does not regulate. Can you explain how conserving how our conserving water is going to help this emergency?
Well, two things, and I'll look to my colleagues if they have others. To the extent that communities conserve whatever their water sources are, whether they're in storage or in groundwater, will last longer. So it's an insurance policy against a drought that goes on longer and longer. And so it's just out of self-interest. The more one can conserve, the more secure one's community will be. Also, the more secure urban communities are, the more flexibility there is in the system to either help other urban communities or agriculture. And so in particular, I would hope that urban communities that are close to agriculture and can see the pain and suffering that is happening in the agricultural community will step up first and foremost in solidarity with their agricultural colleagues.
Okay.
So whether you're being a part of the community that's California or you're just in self-interest, conservation makes sense.
And you mentioned that you don't have a bad list. Would it be more helpful to have a good list, some of the communities that are doing this extremely well already?
Yeah, I think we should put together a good list. We had a number of communities testify in front of us. I mean, it's hard to, if people were joking about it, it's kind of hard to invite people to come and talk at a workshop and tell us how bad you are. I mean, that really doesn't work out all that well. But we should go out and highlight it. I would commend to you on the AQUA website, the Association of California Water Agencies, they do have a document which is a narrative summary of the types of measures that water agencies are doing across the state. It's pretty inspiring. It doesn't have the granular percentages of water savings achieved, but I'll take that as a good suggestion for us to put out a water hero list. That being said, even communities that are doing a lot in terms of mandatory and voluntary could and should do more.
Operator, we're kind of running against our timeline here. We had scheduled about an hour, so I think we have time for perhaps two more questions.
There's only one more question in queue, sir, and that question is from Glenda Anderson with the Press Democrat. Your line is now open.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. It's kind of only, I don't know if it's exactly related to this, but does where would commercial uses like trucks for road work using water for dust control? They typically take it from urban water sources, but I'm not sure where it would fall. They're not exactly residential.
Yeah, it just really depends. It'd be worth asking some local water agencies. Presumably there are agencies that do have both voluntary and mandatory conservation measures that address it, but I do not know the answer.
Okay. Yeah, I was thinking Caltrans uses quite a bit of that when they're doing highway work. Is there any move at all to try to get those that kind of use to be utilizing recycled water instead?
Caltrans actually uses a tremendous amount of recycled water already. I mean, they one of the things we're hoping to do is put more signage up and also detail a number of the things that state agencies are doing. In addition to not watering lawns or having ornamental fountains on, I understand that Caltrans has actually done quite a bit, but
okay.
We should get that out there. They actually have done quite a bit, and they are big users of recycled water. One of the things that we're advising communities to do, of course, is to put signage up where they are using recycled water or gray water so that people do understand that if they see a fountain going or they see landscape irrigation happening, that it's not being done with potable water.
Thank you.
Glenda, thank you very much. That was actually a very, very good question.
Good question.
We get a lot of questions about sister agencies and their use of water. I just wanted to share with the reporters on the line that this audio of this media availability should be available in about an hour and a half, 2 hours or so on our web. I will kick this out to the media list so you guys have a link to it in case you want to refresh your memory and listen again. You've also brought up some good points related to enforcement, and I'll be working with my peers here maybe to clarify some of that. I think there's some good questions here. I suspect it's going to be something that's going to be discussed at the hearing on July 15th. And the other thing I want to share with folks is we have a lot of resources on our website. That's www.waterboards.ca.gov. For those of you that are out of the area, we do simulcast or live stream our board meetings. If you aren't familiar with our website, if you're looking at it, if you look at the About tab and you hit that, you'll see a drop-down menu and you will see a thing that says Board Broadcasts. You should see it already scheduled for next Tuesday, the 15th. It'll be the State Water Resources Control Board, likely in the coastal room. Go ahead and make sure that you get on then. And I usually am in those meetings. And if you have any questions, do not hesitate to email me during the meeting. You can find my email on the website. My last name is atrocious. It's G. Kostyrko, G-K-O-S-T-Y-R-K-O, at waterboards.ca.gov. If you have any follow-up questions, please email me or call me, and I will try to get back to you in a timely manner. At this point, operator, we are done with the media availability. Thank you very much, all.
Thank you for joining. This concludes the conference call. All parties may disconnect at this time.